Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. My guest is Brad Coates, Esquire. He's a frequent guest for those of you who have been listening a long time. I think, Brad, I've had you on my show more than anybody because we go back to days when I lived in Hawaii because Brad is an attorney and he heads up the largest divorce law firm in Hawaii. And I'm so glad you're back, Brad. Hello.
Always happy to be back on with you, Diana. We always have fun, and hopefully it proves illuminating.
Exactly. We like for it to be illuminating. On the back cover of your book, Divorce with Decency, the complete how-to handbook and survivor's guide to the legal, emotional, economic, and social issues, on the back is a blurb from the Honolulu Magazine, which says, jewelry stores should hand this book out with the purchase of every engagement ring. Now, wouldn't that be smart? almost like premarital counseling.
It would certainly increase book sales. I don't know that I've quite got him convinced to do that, but it is a it is pretty important when you think that the marriage contract is probably the most important contract you enter into in your life, and people spend less time thinking about that than they do looking at the warranty for a car. So it is
kind of
smart to try and figure it out in advance if you can.
Yes, and we're talking this time about affairs and extramarital sex, and you've got a very illuminating section in your book on that. So we'll start with that because, let's see, it starts in your book on page 81. We've discussed lots of things about your book, but I don't think we've spent too much time on infidelity affairs and broken hearts, right? Broken hearts often occur with all of this, but let's look at the overview of it.
Affairs can rattle marriages. I've been a divorce lawyer for 40 years, and the Coates and Frye firm that I run here in Honolulu handles thousands of these cases. And not all of them have an affair component in them, but a lot of the time, that is the trigger. It's especially true if you have a male client coming in and seeking a divorce. Women will get divorced for all kinds of different reasons. Lack of communication. They're just, they're vaguely dissatisfied with the way the marriage has turned out. They'll get divorced for a lot of what I call the right reasons. Men will almost always stay married through thick and thin, and men have a lower standard almost for what constitutes a decent marriage. The only time you'll see a man bow out of a marriage, and this is a generalization, of course, is if he's got some new woman on the side that he's looking to link up with, and that becomes his initiating factor. I'll get clients a lot of time, female clients, and I'll say, has your husband changed, or do you think he might have somebody on the side? They're like, well, I don't think so. I think it's just some vague midlife crisis. And I'll say, well, you might take a closer look at that because it almost always is triggered by an outside wahine. Wahine, of course, being Hawaiian for woman. And when they come back to them, they go, you were right. Sure enough, it was him and his secretary or him and his whoever. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of a precipitating cause, so to speak, in at least males filing for divorce.
You have a quote, and I'm not seeing it in front of me, but I remember it from your book, that only about one, and this was a statistic that I think another author had discovered with studies, only about one in three or four men will actually leave their wife because of an affair.
That's true. And if they do, oftentimes it backfires on them because the girl that you're having the affair with and the affair having been largely again, this is a generalization, but you get affairs that are oftentimes triggered by sex, And that's the main focus of it. And then you leave your wife for, you know, the younger, hotter, whoever she is. And then you try and live with her day to day and you go, oh my God, you know, this is harder than living with my ex-wife. So, you know, sometimes the success ratios of second marriages that spun off of an affair are not all that high.
Not all that high. You ask a question, Brad, which I think is very important, and that is infidelity inherent, innate, inevitable? Is it inevitable? And I have some opinions about this, and so do you, but you're my guest, so you start.
Well, probably more inevitable for males, again, than it is for females. You know, the statistics that are totally imprecise when you try and figure out, you know, what percentage of married people actually have affairs. You know, Masters and Johnson thought that somewhere between, you know, 26% and 60% of married men and 18 to 70% of married women have had affairs. There's a book by Dr. David Paresh called The Myth of Monogamy, where he estimates that 30 to 50% of married women and 50 to 80% of married men have had affairs. You know, and of course, nobody admits any of this anyway, so it's really imprecise. But certainly, there is the issue for men in particular to want sexual variety, and they are, so it may be more inevitable for them. Women, I think, have a little bit classier mode of behavior, and they're not necessarily going to go start looking around for affairs, as soon as they get married, the way some guys do. And it's probably a far lesser statistic for them. So it's probably, you know, maybe more inevitable for men and less inevitable for women. What's your thought?
I agree with you completely, and I agree that, and many therapists, many of my colleagues believe that, I don't believe this, but many therapists do, that healthy sexual desire is driven by love, and it's really not. We have a lot of research and extremely common experience that in long-term relationships, as love deepens, desire declines. I mean, that is just the truth. And I've been working with
as
couples.
As love deepens, desire declines. That's interesting.
Yes. And I've been working with couples for 35 years. So I've seen this time and time again. The expectations, you know, there are many therapists that believe, and I don't, but that monogamy is the gold standard of relationships. They see it as a reasonable sort of normal goal for adults and consider people who dislike it, don't want it, or have trouble with it are immature. And I think, you know, this is, and we're going to be talking about all of this, Brad, but it's unfair to tens of millions of adults that we therapists pathologize in the face of overwhelming evidence of monogamy. Monogamy is difficult. It's possible, and I certainly work with couples who are trying to achieve it, or after after the affair to bring the things together. We'll talk about that too. But it's you know.
Well, kudos to those who can pull it off.
Right,
of course.
Right.
But I don't think you have to diss anybody that can't, because to some degree you're fighting your own human biology on this stuff. So and we can talk about that as well. But that is, I don't know that you can tar anybody with a broad brush, because they have an affair.
No, I absolutely agree with you. And you also ask the question on page 81 in your book. Are men hardwired to cheat? So let's talk a little bit about that. I've got some ideas, and you have plenty as well.
Well, you know, the argument could be made that the evolutionary biology, and you know, books like Jared Diamond, the guy who wrote The Guns, Germs, and Steel, and he wrote Third Chimpanzee, you know. The basic biological truism is that humans evolved, just like other animals, to win at the contest of leaving as many descendants as possible.
Yes.
So, you know, that is, you know, that's Darwinian. And the reality of it is, and, you know, I don't want to shock your readers or sound like a sexist pig or anything else, but, I mean, the reality of it is that the male who remains faithful is only going to produce a few offsprings during his lifetime, by definition, because he's got one woman and it can only happen so fast. And in evolutionary terms, that male tends to die out and be outdistanced by unfaithful males who produce far larger numbers of their own kind. They build a bigger tribe faster.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a, you know, almost an evolutionary theory of cheating. And then the problem is that the flip side for the woman is that there's no real advantage for a female to have more than one mate. So for a male, there is kind of an advantage to have more than just evolutionarily speaking, biologically speaking, there's a kind of an advantage for a male to leave lots of offspring and, like I say, build a bigger family, extended family. And then they got more clubs to beat the other guys over the head that have all got a smaller family. Females, it's almost the exact opposite. She wants to have somebody who's going to stick around long enough to feed and protect her offspring and to ensure the survival of her children. So, you know, so that's the kind of a female that has, you know, evolutionarily outdistance, you know, promiscuous women who don't, you know, who have kids by different guys and then they never live to see them. So if promiscuous women die out, promiscuous men, continue to move to the top of the evolutionary food chain. So what remains today are highly promiscuous males and highly monogamous females. And that, you know, that is, like I say, that's not sexism. That's just Darwinism. So you do have this issue where, like I say, you know, men are maybe going to be more hardwired, where we started this conversation, to cheat, and women less so.
And there's a brain component to this as well. Research done at Emory University and in Sweden. So they were looking at voles, and particularly the prairie vole. This is a small rodent. And the prairie vole actually is one of the few mammals that bond with their mates. And the vole's genetic traits give scientists clues about why humans stray from theirs. And it turns out, and I think this is fascinating, you know, lately we've been bringing in more and more neuroscience to explain human behavior, and in this case, voles. They're like little rats, but they're voles with a V. So there's a switch inside the brain that controls the desire to form close ties. And so this Emory University study found it's a gene that regulates the release of vasopressin, also pronounced vasopressin, both ways. It's a hormone that activates receptors in the brain to regulate behavior. And I think this is fascinating because in male voles, vasopressin helps keep the mate close and the competition far away. So assuming that what's true for the voles is also true for humans, vasopressin activates bonding centers in the brain, making you feel more attached and protective. And by the way, in women, oxytocin serves the same purpose. The prairie vole's cousin is the mountain vole, and they're different because the mountain vole is very promiscuous, and the mountain vole doesn't have as much vasopressin. Isn't that fascinating? I think it is anyway.
Well, I haven't done a study of voles per se, but I mean, you know, as long as we're talking about the animal kingdom, I mean, the fact of the matter is, in the animal world, most species are not monogamous by nature, and it's especially true of the apes and the monkeys that are the closest relatives of man. Our closest relative is the chimpanzee, and they're totally promiscuous, oftentimes lining up five or six deep to have sex with receptive females.
Yeah.
And monkeys' behavior, you know, is what triggers the term in our language, monkey business, when humans fool around. So you do have a situation where we are, like I say, somewhat hardwired biologically, and it is, like I say, hats off to those people that can transcend it. It certainly, there's all kinds of benefits, and all throughout my book, we talk about all kinds of benefits that come with a monogamous relationship. Everything from health to finance to you've got sexual safety, you've got emotional safety, you've got the assurance of who the real father is. I mean, there's all kinds of longevity. You've got better health along the way. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why monogamy is a good thing. Certainly a good thing for society, and there's a real question nowadays about whether or not the breakdown of the American family that everybody's talking about, and whether or not the declining marriage rate is contributing to that. Half of the women that are giving birth to children today in America, half of the women that are under 30 giving birth are doing so out of wedlock. So, is that a good thing or not? I'm not going to get all philosophical nor all judgmental about this, but certainly holding a family together is a great thing. But it is a tall order sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a tall order, and there are some downsides to trying to be monogamous, and we're going to talk about that. I mean, you talked about the upsides, and including, by the way, an upside would be that you don't have to risk a sexually transmitted disease.
Which is huge.
Yeah. But I like what you quote. You do your research for your book so well, Brad. So you quote Mark Oppenheimer on your page 83, his illuminating New York Times column entitled Married with Infidelities. And you say that, or you're quoting him, that the goal of marriage should be its overall stability, not just the monogamy issue. And then you go on to quote some Dan Savage, and I love Dan Savage. He's a local guy here in Seattle.
Yeah, he's really an interesting dude.
He is. He really is.
What Oppenheimer and Savage argue is basically exactly what we said, that the primary goal of a marriage ought to be to maintain stable, intact families. Mm-hmm. And Savage, for example, claims to be a pro-family guy, but he argues that a more realistic sexual ethic would actually value honesty and, if necessary, forgiveness instead of absolute monogamy. And he basically places a higher value on the stability of the overall relationship, because that is what it takes to keep the family intact and the nuclear family, rather than on just one particular aspect of a marriage, which is sexual exclusivity. So that, I think, it takes a while. It takes a forgiving nature and a little bit of, thoughtfulness to wrap your head around that. But if you do believe that intact families are a good thing for society, and if you face the scenario which I face all the time in my office, especially with the Wahine, a woman will come into my office, she'll go, "I heard my husband was fooling around. I want a divorce." And I'm going, "Well, I certainly understand that, but how's the rest of your marriage?" "Well, I don't care, I don't care about anything else. I just, the fact that he's been unfaithful, that in and of itself is reason for me to get a divorce." And, my job is to get people divorced when they want to get divorced, so I go ahead and process those kind of divorces. But sometimes you wonder whether, maybe people shouldn't take a deeper breath or go to counseling or try and figure out what's wrong with their own sex life with their spouse. There's doors behind doors. On those kind of issues, and to just say he fooled around, I'm out of here, or more like he's out of here, is only one component of it. You may be really screwing up the family. I mean, maybe cutting off your nose to spite your face, because then you're left with a single mom trying to raise a fatherless family, and there's been all kinds of social issues derived around that too, because when kids grow up without male role models, then they've got problems oftentimes. So there are, like I say, unintended consequences of all of this. Whereas if you went to a marriage counselor, or maybe better yet, to a sex counselor, sex therapist, you know,
or
maybe
somebody like
maybe
myself, who is both a sex therapist and American Family Therapist. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but I've known you, Brad, I've known you since 1999 when I was also living in Hawaii, and your first edition of your book, Divorce with Decency, now you're in a fourth edition, came out, and I read about it in the paper, and I got you on my radio show then. And I know from all our years of friendship as well as this professional radio show guest thing, that you're very good about not encouraging your clients to go directly from the complaint to divorce proceedings. You suggest counseling. You've referred some people to me. You suggest, and you go on cruises, international cruises, and talk about how relationships can be saved from divorce. And I think that gives you lots of integrity, Brad Coates.
Well, thank you very much. I try to adhere to that. And there are, you know, there are several chapters in my book about, you know, how marriages can be saved or improved, and, you know, what is the, you know, who is the right kind of mate to pick. I mean, you know, I'm all in favor of you know, preserving marriages. I've been with my wife for 30 years, and you're now a newlywed, so you obviously believe in marriage once again too. So, you know, it is a great goal to shoot for, but you just kind of have to be a little realistic about sometimes what all is involved.
Yes, and by the way, and Brad knows my husband now, Brian, and we actually did a show where Brian chimed in on February 13th was the last time you were on my show. We talked about a little bit about romance. I mean,
Valentine.
Brad Coates can talk about all kinds of things, and all of these issues are in his book. It's quite wonderful. So, yeah, but I was, you know, you knew my late husband. I was 18 years a widow before I remarried. So I was very picky. You also talk about that in your book, that women are often much more particular and than men. And I was. I certainly was. But
well,
Charlie gave me a pretty high bar.
I'll tell you one time when you know, women are definitely more particular is is when it comes to having an affair. I mean, I'm not, like I say, women have fewer affairs to begin with. And if a woman is going to have an affair, it is probably a more serious issue than, you know, a sort of a fling style affair undertaken by a husband with, you know, his secretary or, you know, some jogging partner or something, you know, may not necessarily threaten the marriage, you know, unduly. But, you know, if a woman's going to have an affair, it's usually more of a more, you know, seriously seeking meaning, you know, style of affair. And that may be a much more serious and problematic issue for the marriage and a stronger predictor for divorce, potentially. I mean, the reality of it is that when it comes to having affairs, just pure sexual attraction plays more of a greater role in our choices of extramarital partners than it did maybe of our spouse. When you marry somebody, you really are looking at, you know, how much is he going to earn? What kind of a housekeeper is she going to be? Is she going to have a professional career? What kind of a mom is she going to be? What's the pedigree from, you know, what's her family like? What, you know, is she going to look like her mother? What, you know, what all these issues that you can go through the checklist. Whereas, you know, it certainly when you're talking about an extramarital affair, you know, a guy, it's just, you know, oh, she's got big boobs, I think I'd like to try and, you know, hit on her. I mean, it's really very visceral, a very quick, almost, you know, the brain is very, male brains in particular, very quickly stimulated. I mean, it almost, your thought process almost becomes secondary to just, you know, just this kind of immediate chemical kind of reaction in your brain. And you quit thinking with the big head, and you start thinking with the little head, or however, maybe
That's
I got
right.
that backwards. I'm never sure which one's which. But
come on.
You know, it is a situation where a guy picks an extramarital partner, just, you know, she's pretty, I want her. You know, if a woman is going to marry somebody, she's more finicky, and she's really more finicky if she's going to be, if it's going to be an adultery kind of a situation, because again, she, you know, she's, as is often the case, you know, women oftentimes run more risk in these kind of relationships. I mean, unwanted pregnancy is a big deal for a woman. It may be the rest of her life, may govern the rest of her life, whereas a guy, you know, maybe he's got to pay some child support, but it doesn't necessarily, you know, it's not going to consume his every waking hour. So you've got, you know, it is a huge decision for women, and they get much more serious about their choices, both of who they're going to marry and who they're going to fool around with outside of marriage.
When the possibility of cheating presents itself, women think of consequences, men think of opportunities. And
perfect.
That's a generalization, but it kind of is a lot of generalizations.
I couldn't have put it better. That may be in my next book. I like that.
Yeah, the possibility of women think of consequences, men think of opportunities, and I think that that's often true. It's often true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's also talk about the fact that monogamy is a radical new idea. You know, a lot of Americans don't know or they don't care very much for history, and some therapists are no exception. But so some therapists assume that monogamy is, quote, normal, end quote, for healthy people, ignoring the fact that long-term monogamy is a radical experiment. And we've never tried it on the mass level that American culture kind of takes for granted.
It's a radical new idea,
monogamy, because relationships now last 50 years rather than the 10 or 20 years of about a century ago, right?
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, and that's no, you know, and it's really only been the last, you know, three, you know, since the really 50s and 60s, maybe not even since the, you know, since the 70s and 80s, you know, mm-hmm. they're, you know, it, you know, it, we're really talking, you know, less than 50 years probably that, and really only in the Western world that monogamy's even been attempted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, got to remember that more than half of the people in the world live in countries where having a second or third or even a fourth wife is totally permissible. I mean, in all the Muslim countries and a lot of Asian countries, you know. The reality of it is, and even in the Western world where monogamy is supposedly considered as the ideal, we've talked about how as many as 70% of men and 40% of women are having affairs anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a situation where it's really a relatively new concept, you know, kind of out of line with human biology. It's come, you know, as women have gained more power in society, you know, the liberated women have taken the lead in running through a lot of different issues. You know, everything from, you know, equal opportunities in employment to you know, to having a major say in you know, I mean, the days I just saw Barbara Bush's funeral on TV, and, you know, and she goes,
yeah.
You know, when I grew up, you know, your husband took off his career and you followed him. I mean, she moved from New York to Odessa, Texas in 1948. Imagine what Odessa, Texas was like for a Smith graduate in 1948. But, you know, she just went along. She just, you know, put on her pearls and followed along. So we're really only talking about
and followed along. That's right. A woman of a different
really
generation.
We're only really talking about a relatively new, you know, short-term experiment, and it is going to be, you know, I've talked before about how women file for 2/3 of all the divorces, you know, nationwide in America. 2/3 of the divorces that are filed for are by the woman. You know, guys will stay in marriages, women, you know, jump out of them. And the more power that women gain in society, the more they are going to insist on you know, the terms of the marriage being, you know, something that's acceptable to them. And again, I'm not trying to sound like a sexist, because I'm all for it. I hire women. I've been married a long time. My wife out earns me. I mean, you know, I'm kind of a docile guy when it comes to some of these issues. And I'm, you know, and I've talked many times on your show about how women are doing better in school and smarter and out earning guys. And, you know,
that's right.
Really, women will probably rule the world. But the reality of it is that they've changed their expectations of marriage to where that, you know, largely in the U.S. Not even so much in, you know, a little bit of Europe, but even in, you know, Europe, in Italy and France, you still, I remember the French President Mitterrand died and both his wife and his mistress were standing side by side at his funeral. I mean, you know, it's
only so in you've France. Got
a, yeah. So you've got a situation where, you know, this is relatively new experiment. Women are taking the lead in a lot of this situation. And when you turn to, you know, it's something that occurs to me as we talk about this, and mm-hmm. I didn't put it in my book, and I haven't got any statistics for this yet, but maybe the next edition. You know,
yeah.
It may be that, you know, as we go along, this whole issue of, you know, who initiates affairs, who has affairs, and so far it's been mostly men and fewer women, it may be that women will start to take the charge of that, too. I mean, just like women are having younger, the Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher, you know, women have a boy toy who's 20 years younger than she is, you know, I mean,
yeah.
women are gonna do whatever they damn well please in society, and it may mean that they will even begin to be the ones that initiate more of the affairs. So it'll be interesting to follow this through to its logical or illogical conclusion.
Yes, I think so. And you point out on page 90 in your book that researchers at Cornell found a much higher infidelity rate among men who earned significantly less than their wives or girlfriends, and stay-at-home husbands were five times
yeah.
more likely to cheat. And I think that's fascinating. But then you also point out that for women, economic dependency has the opposite effect. The more dependent the woman is, the less likely she is to cheat. So there's that opposite effect when it comes to dependency, money, income, and so on.
Well, and that kind of shocked me,
mm-hmm.
you know, to think that, you know, that guys who have got these, you know, overachieving alpha female wives where she's in the boardroom and he's the stay-at-home dad,
mm-hmm.
That has become a role that, like I say, that the liberated women praise that role in society, and they think that guys that do that, the Alan Alda types, a sensitive male, you know, they're on, you know, they're,
yes.
they're, you know, that's that should be the standard. But it's interesting to hear that, you know, the guys who maybe feel, I don't know whether they feel slightly emasculated or whether they've just got more spare time on their hands or whatever, but you know, they're the ones that actually are the most likely. If your wife out earns you and out achieves you, maybe that's a way of regaining your manhood. I don't know, but that was a very strange thing to discover, that higher infidelity rate amongst men who earn significantly less than their wives or girlfriends, including
mm-hmm.
stay-at-home husbands.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, okay, so that's interesting. And from my point of view, as a therapist, neither clients or other therapists, like to hear this, but after an infidelity, the betrayed person doesn't own the relationship. And so, because while people are in pain, they are responsible for how they express themselves. And by the way, this is what we tell our kids on the playground, too. So there are certain responsibilities. The betrayed one, in my view, has full responsibility for how he or she responds to it. And the trashing one's dignified adult values to gratify feelings of anguish or rage will almost always have consequences that the betrayed doesn't want. So you have to watch how you respond.
That's an interesting and pretty progressive, viewpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is progressive. I'll give an example, and this comes from my own practice. So, because the betrayed spouse will often say, you know, I don't know if I can ever trust you again because you hurt me so much and I feel like I'm dying inside. And that's very real. That's very sad. You know, sometimes I have couples where it's usually the woman who's crying as she says that. But it will not work if that same woman says, you're the worst person in the world, and you're a liar, and you have no integrity. You know, that will not get you very far along. And you probably have some women in your office who accuse their men of that. You're a liar, you have no integrity. That does not progress you further along reconciliation or just even having a decent relationship.
Well, you know, and there it goes. You're right. I mean, it turns into character assassination. What basically may be something that's triggered by basic human evolutionary biology suddenly turns into a, you know, a horrible moral flaw that is worthy of condemnation, not only by the person who's being affected by it, but anybody else who will listen and spread the word even further. Because, I mean, people just love to talk about this kind of stuff and gossip and et cetera, et cetera. You know, the favorite is, you know, it's not so much that he had an affair, it's that he lied about it. You know, as if anybody ever tells the truth about sex. I mean, come on, who are we kidding? I mean, you know, you're going to come home to your wife and say, oh, yeah, I was with Mitzi last night, and it was really, you know, fine, and she's totally different than you are. And that really is the key word is different. It may not even be better. It's just that people, you know, men in particular, seek variety, and it may be that just doing something different is more exciting, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you don't love your wife. Somehow you're a lying sack of shit, for lack of a better word, and then if you got kids, it's even worse, because you know, not only have you done this to me, but you've done this to our family. How can you do this? And you know, I mean, the character assassination just spirals and out of control sometimes. And not to say that those emotions aren't legitimate when a wife feels that way about a cheating husband or whatever, but it doesn't, you know. It takes, I guess, a Dan Savage to take a deep breath and say, hey, but is this worth ruining our entire family over?
Exactly.
And,
right.
And that is, you know, that really is kind of the trade-off. To accuse, you know, guys, I mean, you know, I guess it's, you know, I mean, I guess by definition it's immoral to have an affair, depending on your standards of morality. But, you know, to then say, oh, and then you're a liar and a horrible human being, and I can't trust anything else you do. I mean, you know, it's that's a bit of a stretch.
I have clients, usually it's the woman, who will say after an affair, how do I know you won't do it again? And I think, first of all, a person who has promised sexual exclusivity may have some difficulty with this, because, you know, he might say, well, I'll try harder. Well, trying to maintain their agreement isn't probably good enough. But second, people need emotional skills in order to say no to themselves if this is what they want to try to do, right? Whether it's about food, shopping, sex, wasting time, or anything else. And then for lots of guys, the next, quote, temptation, end quote, may look quite different than the last one. So I have some solutions for the best answer about why the betrayed might want to eventually trust the betrayer.
Oh, let's hear them.
And, yeah, so I think the betrayer, and this is where a therapist like myself can come in, can help the betrayer do some internal work. So to understand why he was willing to break their commitment. Now, I'm saying he, but sometimes it's a she, but we'll keep it the he right now since they usually outnumber. You know, why he was able to break their commitment or willing. And next to... there's a process by which he might intend to acquire new emotional skills to help him through complicated situations. And then next, to enthusiastically create and maintain open communication with their mate. Earlier today I saw a couple, and she kind of would like to have a threesome or an affair, and he's totally against it. It's a sort of a switch, but anyway, that she was able to vocalize it. And so the thing is, they need to talk about it, because so many couples don't talk about it. And I help them talk about their different desires, because so many, I said, did you have this conversation before you got married? And they did, and they thought they were on the same page, but they weren't. So there are lots of complications and nuances, and I get it.
Yeah.
And it's difficult.
It's a tough one, and it's a, what did we say at the beginning? It's a tall order.
It's a tall order, and
I'm looking at a quote from Stephanie Coons, who wrote a book called Marriage, A History. And she says, for thousands of years, it was just expected that men would have affairs and flings. It was not until the 20th century that Americans evolved an understanding of marriage in which partners must meet all of each other's needs. The key word is all.
Right.
Sexual, emotional, and material. When we rely on our partners for everything, any hint of betrayal becomes more terrifying, and this is the bind that we are in. And that is definitely the difference between modern marriages and prior marriages. I mean, it used to be, if you go to Europe and go visit these palaces in Europe, there's the king's suite at one end of the palace, there's the queen's suite at the other end of the palace. They didn't even live in the same half of the palace. I mean, you know, it was just they got married because they wanted to restore the royal lineage and make, you know, peace treaties between nations, or, you know, the social climb or whatever. You know, somebody needed somebody to support them, and somebody needed, you know, this kind of a political or economic alliance, whatever. But, you know, it was never expected that they would be meeting all of each other's needs. They would meet a very specific set of needs, for a roof over your head, or upward mobility in society, or, you know, siring the kids or whatever. But you need to think that it's going to be everything, that the sex is going to be perfect, that they're going to be perfect as far as being your emotional support, that they're going to be, you know, the perfect financial provider. Now we have pushed marriage into a configuration where that is the expectation, that for a good marriage, it's supposed to be perfect on all fours, on all fronts. And then the expectation gets, you know, triggered even worse, where if you drop the ball on any of those issues, and certainly affairs would be the sexual end of the spectrum, then it's betrayal and it's terrifying, and the whole thing falls apart. Whereas, you know, that would have never, you know, it would have never been the expectation that, you know, that a Chinese ruler's, you know, fifth wife would be jealous of his eighth wife, or, you know, whatever, and that she would have the gall to leave and take half of his wealth for, you know, over that, because she heard about one transgression. I mean, it's just it's a whole different set of expectations. Plus, we all live longer, so now we prolong that expectation even further. You not only have got to do it for a short period of time, you got to do it forever and be the perfect spouse. It just gets to be, a tall order.
Yeah, it's a tall order. My female client earlier today said, kind of makes me, and she's young, relatively young, 30s. She said, it makes me sad to think that I might die without ever having a threesome.
Well, it's a bucket list item, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, and he's threatened by that. So all of these things require good communication, right?
On a level that maybe we're, you know, I mean, really, a lot of people just aren't equipped to do it.
Well, right, but, you know, they're at least seeing me where they have an opportunity to communicate about it, and I can be a mediator of sorts. And honestly, Brad, this is one reason why I'm as long as I keep my marbles, I don't intend to retire, because I love my work and I can help couples, and I have enough experience so that. And same for you. You know, it's experience in life and in your professional work make a lot of difference, don't they?
Well, I do get a couple. That's probably why I haven't retired either. I mean, I've been doing this for 40 years, and I've done enough divorces and made enough money. I could have retired a long time ago. But the Coates and Frye firm that I run is, I'm the Coates, so you do feel like you've got a responsibility to try and help people as best you can. And I can't tell you how many times I'll have a 1 hour session with a client, and they'll come in and say, this is weird to say, but within this 1 hour, I've learned more I've gotten more out of you faster than I got out of, 10 sessions of marriage counseling over the last, year and a half or whatever.
Yes.
I mean, if you're a much more realistic counselor, but a lot of counselors start with, tell me about your mother, tell me about your father. And we work up from there. And by then, 6 months of those kind of sessions and, the cat's already out of the bag. I mean, the people have already separated and sworn at each other. And that's the other problem. I mean, you talk about how much communication skill level it requires for somebody to transcend something like an extramarital affair. I mean, you got to be a pretty communicative couple to get past that. Not to say it can't be done and that it maybe shouldn't be done, but it requires a skill set that most people who just want to, fling the flower pot at their spouse as soon as they hear about an affair, they don't got that kind of level of communication, and most people don't. It really is a tall order. We keep coming back to that.
It's a tall order. There's sort of a group of many of the clients that I see when there's an affair on one person's part, it has to do with kind of a mix of unmet expectations, lack of excitement, boring sex lives, emotional detachment, and feeling more like a parent, in some cases, right, than a sexual being. And so then I have to help the couple, and this is my work. I love it. I mean, it's hard work sometimes, but to repair the damage that's been done. And the concept behind marital repair is rather simple. Communication on all fronts as a way to reconnect with one another. And I think creating new goals for the relationship, discovering ways to celebrate their sexuality. We have to redo this if they're going to stay together. Learning to communicate effectively and respectfully. These are tall orders, right? Making visual and verbal contact with one another on a daily basis. All of these can rejuvenate many couplings. And that's the work that I feel I have to do, and I feel good about it. I can't even compare how I was even when I lived in Hawaii. Well, I didn't do as much therapy then when I lived with Charlie. He wanted me available to travel. But I'm just, I have more life experience under my belt and both, personal life experience and then professional experience. So I feel like
I've probably handled, the firm I run, we've got 11 lawyers here at the Coates and Frye firm, and between the group of us, we end up doing over 40 years. We've probably done 30,000 divorces. I personally have probably done about 8,000 of them. I mean, you'd have to be an idiot not to have had learned something from that process. I mean, not only do I get to try and live through my own life, which is not always perfect, but I also get to listen to 8,000 other people come in and tell me their story. And for you, being very much in love with your first husband, then being widowed, then being single, then getting remarried. I mean, all those life, those hallmarks along the road of life have got to have made you a more experienced, sensitive therapist. And that's why I refer people to you, although it's a little harder now that you're in Seattle.
I know. It's a little harder, but yeah. I become more empathic, more compassionate with all of these things.
Oh, no question.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of other quotes from my book as we wind
Please.
Down here that I just wanted to try and throw in on this subject.
Please.
There's a quote from a guy named Paul Blanchard who wrote a book, Why Men Cheat, kind of a tacky title. He says, the decision to accept cheating can be heart-wrenching. Half of all women have had to go through this experience at least once. However, the odds are with the wife. Only one man in four leaves his wife when he is cheating. And that's probably true. As far as the guy actually going, okay, I'm so much in love with her that I got to leave you, and I got to leave the kids, and I got to leave this wonderful house we've built, and face the derision of all my friends socially, et cetera. You know, I mean, a lot of guys, right, wrong, or sideways, are going to be, you know, are going to think twice before they're actually going to leave their marriage. The trigger is largely likely to be how the wife responds. If she says, you know, get out of this house right now, well, then I guess the decision's been made before a guy's even had time to think about what the ramifications might be. But you're right about the fact that, you know, the more you can take your time, communicate, and take a deep breath, it makes more sense. And, you know, it's too bad that more people can't do that. Although, like I say, I can't claim that it's easy. The other factors that I wanted to talk about is, you know, that affairs aren't cheap. The cost of a four-month extramarital affair.
That's fascinating. In your
Time
book.
Magazine,
go ahead.
Time Magazine estimates the cost of even a four-month extramarital affair, including getaways and gifts, at about $20,000. So that's an interesting aspect of it. And then here's, you know, there's also statistics that show that women who suspect that their spouses are cheating, you know, oftentimes are right more often than not. I mean, it's almost that gut feel proves to be a very good predictor. There's statistics that show that. And there's an interesting aspect about a couple of holidays in particular that are tricky. Wall Street Journal ran a cleverly titled article called Valentine's Day, One Tough Day for Two-Timers. And talked about as cheaters desperately trying to juggle multiple Valentines, private investigators working overtime. You know, you've got everything supposed to be both places at once. Not all that easy. And so Valentine's Day can be really tough on cheating husbands. Valentine's Day is a tough one for wives who sometimes didn't get, you know, only got a half a dozen roses instead of a dozen roses. That's a time where people get upset. Father's Day is a time where dads feel like they're a bit unappreciated because, you know, they're underappreciated compared to their wives who got, you know, everything thrown at them on Mother's Day. And then Father's Day comes along on June 22nd, a month and a week later, and everybody goes, yeah, yawn. Thanks, Dad. Uh-huh. Here's your tie. And guys can feel upset by that. So it's a tough time. These holidays that are supposed to be so wonderful can be upsetting junctures along the road of life, especially if you've got, you know, multiple relationships going or, you know, feeling that way. The other thing that you've got to think about, and this is, I think, you know, hugely important and becoming more important all the time, is the fact that the role of pornography, which we've talked about and you could do an entire show on, is huge in these situations because, you know, you've got, the basic, you know, one basic bottom line is that pornography, you know, is mostly males watching it, mostly males watching, you know, professional sexy women, younger professional sexy skilled pumped up, you know, women. And doing all kinds of things that their wives are probably less likely to be doing. And it encourages men to look upon women as objects rather than as individuals. And that, because pornography is becoming so widespread and masturbation has gone up, like the estimates are that masturbation has gone up between 50 and 500% for men. I mean, you know, it is really the whole impact of the sexual thing and the easy availability of an idealized form of sexuality compared to the reality, you know, that has left people, you know, again, especially mainly men, because they're the culprits, the main culprits. It's created an even more jarring kind of chasm to try and bridge, and pornography's off the hook. I mean, we all know that now.
They're related to what you just said, and I read this several years ago, and I don't know if it's currently true, but so Laura Ashley, the website, was designed for men and women who wanted to cheat on their spouses.
Laura Ashley is a retail catalog. It's Ashley Madison. You're close.
Oh, geez, you're right. Thank you for correcting me. Oh, that's terrible.
Actually, that's perfect because it shows you haven't been on that site, Diana, so that's actually a good thing.
Thank you, Brett.
You've only been married 2 months, you know. You don't want to get on there just yet.
Oh, no, I don't have a need to. But anyway, thank you. Thank you. Ashley Madison. I'm embarrassed. Ashley Madison reported that right after Mother's Day, the women who signed up on Ashley Madison went way up. And the theory was that these women, right after Mother's Day, were not feeling appreciated, not by their husbands, not by their children. So they signed up to try to have an extramarital relationship. Isn't that interesting?
Well, that is interesting, and that goes to what we were talking about Valentine's Day, Father's Day, Mother's Day.
All right,
day,
right.
You know, and especially, you know, again, I mean, I wasn't around in the 1950s to watch whether my dad gave my mom, you know, a half a dozen roses or a full dozen roses, but, you know, it has to do with the marketing and the retail and the social media and all the expectations. I mean, now you're just saturated with what the expectation ought to be. You read about it with, you know, kids going to the prom, you know, in high school. I mean, I used to go to the, you know, the prom. You got a corsage, you went, you know, it was nice. But now you got to have a limousine, you got to have a tuxedo, you got, you know, nowadays bachelor parties that you are you know, used to be, or girls' bridal parties. You know, it used to be that you just, you know, somebody in your hometown threw one. Now everybody's got to go to Las Vegas and spend $5,000 over the weekend. I mean, the effect of marketing and the consumer culture has just amped up the expectations for all of these holidays, and certainly Mother's Day is a classic example. The other thing, that since you mentioned Ashley Madison, I mean, think about the impact of that. Here we've got, and again, this goes to the social media and how much this is contributing to everything. To have a website where married couples deliberately sign up to have extramarital affairs, holy shit. I mean, you know, that...
It's a reflection of our current culture, isn't it?
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. I mean,
it really is unbelievable. And then you saw what happened with Ashley Madison. I mean, somebody hacked it and then published the names of everybody.
Oh,
everybody was on it.
We
got a couple of divorce clients out of that ourselves.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I have to warn you, we're about to end the show because they cut me off a little bit, or us off a little bit before the top of the hour. So let's say some final summary words, Brad. You go ahead, and then I'll chime in if there's time.
Well, maybe try not to have affairs if you want to stay married, and if you do have affairs, try to be a little more understanding about them, and and realize that there's a lot more to the marital institution than just, you know, a sexual escapade here or there. You know, the midlife crisis, you know, that could have an interesting effect. Some people say that as guys approach midlife, you know, their testosterone subsides, and that they're more likely to head into the barn and less likely to be having affairs. Other people say, you know, this is your last chance and you're going to go for it. And, you know, so there's a lot of factors to be considered. And we'll be back another day to consider them, I'm sure. Aloha,
and
everybody.
We're going to talk about it again, Bradley Coates. Thank you so much. Another great show with you. Goodbye, everybody.
Aloha, everybody. Bye for now.
Bye. My